Here at the Secretary of State's office. Thank you all for joining us. We really appreciate it. We've got a lot of great data and a good conversation for today, so we'll go ahead and get started. I did want to go ahead and go around the room because I know we've got a couple of new people in our group today, so we'll have the members of the commission go ahead and introduce themselves. Mr. Secretary, would you like to start off?
I'm Wayne Williams, Colorado Secretary of State.
Good afternoon. I'm Steve House, Chairman of the Republican Party.
Dominic Moreno, State Senator-elect, Senate District 21.
Karen Goldman, Colorado Municipal League.
Pam Bacon, Logan County Clerk.
Michael Valdez, Special District Association.
Jennifer Levin, Disability Law, Colorado.
Elena Nunez, Colorado Common Cause.
Martha Tierney, Colorado Democratic Party.
Matt Crane, Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder and President of the Colorado County Clerks Association.
Steve Fenberg, Senator-elect for Senate District 18, sitting in for Representative Pabon.
Deborah Johnson, Denver Clerk.
Evie Valencia Jackson, Governor's Office, here for Kurt Morrison.
Great. You can just leave it there, and then as we need to. One of the things we ask you to do is... Oh, do we want to go around the room as well? Okay, in the back, why don't we go around the room and you guys can introduce yourselves.
We're good. George Athanasopoulos.
Jack Tate, Senator of Arapahoe County.
And Jack, go ahead and come on up to the table since your Republican Senate colleague isn't here. So, if we can let Fenberg fill in for a member of the distinguished House and being a lowly senator-elect, we can certainly let a senator fill in for a senator.
Jessica Campbell Swanson with the Colorado Young Democrats.
Carolyn Siegel on behalf of America Vote.
Carol Tone, League of Women Voters.
Elizabeth Steele, Colorado Common Cause.
Ellen Dunn, Communications Consultant.
Jacob Viano, Denver Republican Party.
Carolyn Tatro, Special District Association.
Peg Cage, County Chairman, Boulder County GOP.
Rudy Santos, Weld County.
David Stahl, Weld County.
Adam Gonzalez, Weld County.
Caleb Thornton with the Secretary of State's office.
John Halbert, HB Legacy Media.
Mona Moffitt, Denver Dems.
Kay Leaf, Denver Dems.
Tony Larson, League of Women Voters.
Pam Anderson, Colorado County Clerks Association.
Gary Zimmerman, Chief of Staff, Secretary of State's office.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome. We had some handouts. We may have flown through them, but if you're, they're basically the slides that you're going to see. If you have trouble reading them, you know, let us know. We can rip off some new, new versions of them. A couple of things. If you want to make a comment, this is most exclusively for the commissioners, but if you want to make a comment, for the record, make sure and have a microphone that you're talking into so that we can capture it. We are recording this, and it's going out live on the internet. We're also recording it for posterity so that you can go back and listen to it if you miss the meeting or want to hear something again. The other thing is please tell us who you are when you're making a comment, because it's really tough to distinguish who said what when you're going back and listening to it a month later or 2 months later. So tell us who you are and then also use the mic. So I'm gonna do a bunch of data now and talk to you about some of the interesting information that came from the 2016 general election, kind of walk you through some of the vote counts, vote totals, registration totals, and the way that those tracked across counties and across days during the actual election, and especially during the VSPC period, because that's what we're talking about today. So I have a couple of caveats. The first caveat is that no two data extracts on these subjects are the same, because if you ask the question differently, or if maybe you try to capture just a slightly different piece of data than the one that's been previously captured, it will come out slightly differently. So the information you're going to see is our best data on the VSPC activity for this election. If you ask the question slightly differently, you will get slightly different data. And so a county may very well have, like Pam or Matt or Deb might very well have, data that's slightly different than ours. It's going to be trend the same. You're going to see the trends, and the trends are going to stay steady. But just a caveat that if you're trying to compare particular counties and you're comparing a county's data to our data, that data may be off just slightly because of the way that we capture the data or the way that we're trying to pull the data. Another thing that is important to note is that a lot of what I'm going to talk about is about VSPC transactions. And so what qualifies as a transaction is a very important question. And when we get there, I want to involve you in that idea, and feel free to offer what you believe a transaction is if we're not capturing it, because we can always go back and try to re-understand what that data is so that we can more accurately get to transactions. But we think this captures everything that qualifies as a transaction. And then the last thing I would say is that this data is completely agnostic. It is not attempting to make any particular political or policy point. It is just data. It is just the statistics of the election. So I'm sort of the neutral arbitrator today. I don't have a dog in any fight. I'm just presenting the data as we pulled it out of score. So let me go ahead and start through it. This is sort of a mass data sheet, kind of talking about the 2016 general election with a whole bunch of particular data points. In this election, we had, by the end, by election day, after the completion of voting on election day, we had 3,840,159 voters. These were registered voters. Of those, 2,859,216 actually voted. Those percentages come up to 74.5% for registered voters turnout, and then percentage turnout of eligible voters was 71.9%. Just to give you some context to understand how that plays out nationally, Colorado was fourth in percentage turnout of registered and fourth in percentage turnout of eligible. We were third until Maine finally loaded their final results about a week ago, and turns out they're about a half a point ahead of us. There are no other states that are in the 70s. Minnesota was number one, New Hampshire was number two, Maine was number three, and we were number four. And then there's a big gap to Wisconsin, which was at 69 point something. So those four were really the top vote getters in the country. Eligible, if you're interested, eligible is figured by calculating it against those who could have been based on the community survey of the U.S. Census. Those who could have been registered they capture this extra group of people that are not currently our registration database. Steve?
Two questions. One is, on the three states that were ahead of us, yep. You know, mail-in versus polling place, do you know the answer as to what they were?
Yeah, absolutely. Minnesota is a pretty traditional polling place election. They are same-day registration. They don't have a high percentage of vote by mail. New Hampshire is running elections like they did in the 1880s. They have polling places on corners. They have very small lists for precincts, you know, precincts of under 2,000. It's a very, very traditional way of voting. Maine is kind of got some vote by mail, but again, it's a very traditional way of voting. So we were pretty substantially higher in the vote by mail states and the ones that are predominantly vote by mail.
So the second question is going to come up on number nine. comparing, and you can get there when you get there, but comparing this to other years.
Yeah.
You know, because that seems like a really low number of people who didn't actually mail it in.
Yeah.
But I'd love to see what 14 was as a percentage, if you know.
Yeah, I do.
And know, just for, to show so, us comparisons on a lot of
so these just numbers. To jump down to these two, 8 and 9, those are, I guess, 9 and 10. The percentage that voted by mail that dropped off was about 70%, and the percentage that voted by mail and used the United States Postal Service to return their ballot was around 30%. That tracks pretty closely with what we saw in 2014. And in 2014, it was, we estimated, around 67-33. So that seems to be the trend line. We do have more and more people that are just dropping off instead of returning by the U.S. Postal Service. Some other important statistics here, which will sort of speak to the ongoing discussion, is we had 2.6 million that voted by mail, so voted a mail ballot. So these are people who received a ballot in the mail and voted that ballot. It was either their first ballot or their second ballot or potentially their third ballot, but they got a ballot by mail and they voted that one. Now, if they got more than one, those other ones were spoiled, but they voted a mail ballot. The people who voted in person are 214,499. This gets to what we consider to be an in-person transaction. The way that we have calculated in our office an in-person transaction is a person who was not registered, they became registered, so they registered at a VSPC, and then they voted at a VSPC. That could be two kinds of people. That could be somebody that's never registered to vote in Colorado before, or it could be somebody who had previously registered to vote, had been canceled, and then were registered again. So there's two pieces of the new group. Then that also, voting in person also includes updates. These are people that came into the office, into the VSPC, and said, I want to update my file, and then they voted. So those are people that did a transaction and then voted. And that's the lion's share of the people that did updates. And then that also includes those people who are what we call existing voters. These were people that were not new voters. They weren't updating their registration. They were simply voting in person. So they weren't, they were spoiling a ballot. Either they were bringing it in or they were spoiling a ballot that they didn't have on their person. And they were getting issued a new ballot and they were voting in person, usually by DRE or by a flat ballot. So those are what qualifies for vote in person. There's also a small group of people that receive provisional ballots that qualify as vote in person. They're a little different in that they don't fall into the daily number, but total statewide, we only had 5,930 people who voted provisionally. And when we get to the final slide, or one of the final slides, you'll see that of the 5,930, so 5,930 who voted provisionally, 3,990 of those were in Boulder County. And that was because of their internet outage that they had that didn't allow them to get into their county system to be able to get into the VSPC. So Boulder did an amazing thing on Election Day. They not only did they hold an election, but they held an election completely by provisional ballots in like 11 of their polling places, which is a pretty amazing thing. So so if you do the math, Boulder probably would have had somewhere around, you know, 100 or so provisional ballots had they not had this. And so we really did have very close to 2,000 provisional ballots statewide. And then the rest were the Boulder ballots, which were just regular ballots, but they had to be voted provisionally because of their outage. I'll also mention here the number that were submitted, number of mail ballots that were submitted prior to Election Day, and then the number that were submitted on Election Day. You can see there's a lot of activity on Election Day as compared to those prior days. And then just because it's kind of interesting to our office, I included how many page views we had on online voter registration on Election Day, which was over 2.7 million.
And just to clarify with respect to 7 and 8, those are actually the ballots received by the clerk. So some of those ballots may have been mailed ahead of time. So
absolutely.
It's more received mail ballot before Election Day and received mail ballot on Election Day.
Yeah, and that's a very good clarification, because the ones submitted on Election Day would be over-inclusive, because it's going to catch a whole bunch of them that were sitting in the drop boxes from the night before, because people are really active on Monday and Tuesday. And it's also going to catch, you know, a lot of people whose mail has been out there for a couple of days. So anyway, that's kind of your general statistics from the 2016 election. Any more questions on those? We can always come back to them if you have anything that comes up. Okay. So what I did was I dropped a lot of the per day number by county into a spreadsheet and then mapped it out to show you visually what the transactions by day, and then various transactions by day, and then ultimately I'm going to even do it by hour per VSPC coming up. So, but this shows you all of those 214,000 transactions across those days. I'm going to throw out one caveat here, which is that those provisional ballots I mentioned, the 5930, those 5930 are all on Election Day. That's not necessarily the way it will be. I mean, there will be a handful of provisional ballots which will occur before Election Day. But in this particular election, with Boulder having nearly 4,000 that occurred all on Election Day, or virtually all on Election Day, that number is pretty accurate. I mean, there may have been, you know, 300 or so that were spread out in these earlier days. But for the most part, that captures all of the VSPC activity for provisional ballots on Election Day. But you can see that the trend line is that there was a pretty steady number, a little bit lower on Saturday. Then the second week, that steady number again continues, but now about twice as high or thereabouts, peaking out at Friday. Good activity on Saturday, and then the Monday and Tuesday, obviously, the activity ratchets up substantially. Okay. Now I'm doing VSPC new registrations by day. So this is just new. So we're going to go through each one of the groupings that I mentioned. So the new registrations by day, again, relatively steady in that first week. Again, the break on Sunday, then a couple of peaks on Monday and Friday, and then the Monday and Tuesday of election week. So the new registrations by day sort of, for the most part, mirrors the overall transactions. Okay. Now, this is updates. Again, people that are coming into a VSPC updating their file. This shows VSPC updates across that first week. Again, pretty steady. Second week, it kind of doubles, maybe even triples by the time you get to the end of the week. And then Monday and Tuesday, again, with the big move up. Existing voters. So these are existing people that we didn't have to do anything with their file. All they wanted to do was get a new ballot. Again, numbers in the 1500s or so across that first week. They get close to doubling in that second week. Friday, they really go up. And then on Monday and Tuesday the following week, big surge. Now what I've done is I've collapsed these into a larger measure, which then takes into account how many VSPCs were active during those days. So it gives you a measure of how much activity there was at a VSPC instead of how much activity there was statewide, right? So now you can see, and I've even given you the bottom table, which shows you how much activity we're talking about across the various categories. So new, update, existing, and then overall transactions. And this number you see is overall transactions. So at a VSPC, on the first day of early voting, which was 10/24, October 24th, there was an average of 17 transactions at a single VSPC on the first day of early voting. Most of those were open for around 8 hours. We're going to get to the next slide, which will kind of give you that hourly breakdown, but it's kind of good to know. Martha, did you? Let me give you a... Got it.
Thanks, Martha Tierney. I just had a question about how you arrived at the average. So did you just take the total number that were open and divide it by the number of transactions?
That's exactly what we did. That's exactly what we did. And of course, since we had those earlier numbers, they're all now in the same spreadsheet. So the number of new that you saw in the earlier graph is divided against number of VSPCs open. And then, by the way, the number of VSPCs opened was constantly changing because the counties were pretty steady in this first week. But then by the time we got to the first part of that second week, some counties were adding one now, and then another county would add three, and then some counties were waiting all the way until the end of the week to add VSPCs. So that number of VSPCs was changing virtually every day across those days. Yeah.
Thank you, Martha Tierney, again. Just one follow-up on that. So do you have the granular data that would show... Because I think this is really helpful, and thank you for breaking it down this way. It is really helpful to see it. But I do think that one of the things that we will want to look at is all VSPCs are not the same, right? So some of them have lots of capacity for throughput. Some of them are in really rando locations that don't make them as appealing. So I think it will be helpful to get that data as well so that we can kind of think about not just pure numbers, but the quality of the sites as we're looking at how we might improve this system.
That sounds good. We do have something that will help you with that. It's like kind of a sledgehammer. It's not a scalpel. So it's kind of tough to use. But what we do have from our database managers is the number of active score users in a particular location, which can speak to how many people did you have working to check people in. And that check-in is really where you're going to get capacity. The check-in is the good measure of capacity. So across these, you can see that trend line that we had before pretty much holds steady with most of the activity that we see in the first week pretty much doubled in that second week with, again, the big spike toward the election day. So now I've done it on the next slide by hour. So now what we've done is taken all those VSPCs, asked the counties how many hours did you have them open. We've now collapsed that into an hour function, which is now the denominator for this measure. So now you can see how many particular transactions we had per hour per VSPC. Okay? So in this first week, we had approximately 2 transactions per hour across all of those days for that first week. Can you go back to the last one? So on the per day, you'll notice that Saturday goes down pretty pronounced. And then this Saturday goes down in a pretty pronounced way. So the first Saturday and the second Saturday. But if you go by hour, you can see that by hour, they remain pretty steady. And what that kind of, I think, speaks to is that when they were open, people used them at approximately the same amount of time as they used them across the other days in which they were open for a full day. So, yeah, Steve.
So along the Steve House, along the lines of what Martha was talking about, at 38.8 per hour, how long are people waiting? How long does it take? How long are people waiting?
It would be very much conditioned on how the VSPC is set up, how many people you could get through it, how many vote marking machines they had or DREs they had, and whether people were using DREs or flat. Whether in Boulder, you're gonna be log jammed because they had so many provisional ballots. So there's various criteria. What's that? Okay. So this is the per hour. You can see that if you want to break it down by the individual criteria. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna add one thing to that. A lot of it, it really varies on the type of transactions that are being done. If that 38.8 was all just here's your ballot, that's pretty quick. If it's people who are having to do the judges entering the complete data, and frankly, it depends on the judges. So I was talking to the El Paso County clerk after they closed their motor vehicle offices at 5. They shifted motor vehicle staff who were used to fast-paced environments, and they were much faster with them than they were with the judges supplied by the parties. So there's a lot of factors going into that. number of stations, the quality of the judges, and the type of transactions being done. So it's hard to get that specific. But we're going to give you some more data coming up here, and hopefully that'll help.
I asked the question because of El Paso, because it appeared to me on Election Day that it was discouraging in El Paso because it took so long for so many people to vote. And that's why I wanted to try to figure out, do we have enough capacity? Is the productivity right? Because if you start discouraging people to vote and you have to send people down to encourage them to stay in line, mm-hmm. that's probably defeats what we're trying to accomplish.
You know, interestingly, El Paso has a very special number coming up, which I think really speaks to that, to the issue that they had in El Paso County, which was it seemed like they had the longest lines in the state or some of the longest lines in the state. But what you'll see, I'll speak to a table we've got coming up in about 10 tables, but El Paso also had the highest percentage and the highest number of new registrations. And so new registrations take longer to do than to just give you a new ballot. So that kind of activity and the change in that activity has a big effect on, you know, what the speed is and the throughput. All right, so now what we did was we wanted to make sure that we weren't just finding odd numbers that couldn't hold across various counties. And we thought that it might be interesting for you to see the five largest population counties in the state and see if the numbers kind of hold true and see how they compare to the rest of the state. So what we did was we took the five most populous counties and did the same measures. So if you go back, this is, you can see that statewide, the average transaction was 465 on Election Day, right? And then 122 on that Monday. So that was statewide. So go forward to. In Adams County, they were at 728 and then 129 on that Monday. So they were, Adams County was handling a time again more than, the rest of the state in terms of their volume on Election Day. And Adams County did have lines. And so that may speak to that. They were using the, you know, previous days as a measure of what they were to anticipate, and then they get to Election Day, and they had a lot more people come in than most other counties. Go ahead and go forward. This is their per hour. Adams County was at 60 per hour and 14 per hour on that Monday. If you go back to, you'll see that's per day. There you go. It was, the average was 39 per hour statewide and 15 per hour on that Monday, so go forward to. So Adams County, again, handling a lot more than the average for the state. So we did this across all the counties. Matt will be very interested in the next couple of slides.
Yeah, let me add something there. If you go back and you look at the prior week, Adams County is about the same as other counties. They're not, their average is pretty close to the overall average. So there's this huge spike up on Election Day that occurs with your neighbors, Senator, where they voted in a higher proportion at the end.
And you'll also notice that Adams County has a large bump on Saturday, which we don't really see across the other counties. So interesting as well. Next to our Arapahoe County, so this is Arapahoe by day. They were running at about 700 per VSPC per day in their county, and 133 prior to that on that Monday. Again, as the Secretary points out, they were right around that 20 or 25 range that we saw in those early days, and then they see the second week bump, and then the lead into those big couple of days. Per hour, again, around 60 and 16, see a lot of the same kinds of numbers. They did have a bigger couple of days with the Saturday or Friday and Saturday before Election Day. But these numbers, again, pretty close, maybe a little higher, but pretty close to what we saw across the state. Okay, then we go into Denver. Denver was at 716 and 164, again, very much in keeping with what we saw from Arapahoe and Adams. And they were in the low 20s in that first week. So, again, very much like the state. And then they saw the gradual rise in that second week. Interestingly, Denver appears to be relatively low statewide in these first 2 weeks, and then they see the higher peak on Election Day. So they seem to have more Election Day voters. Next one for Denver, or next. This is the Denver per, yeah, and then El Paso County. So then we've got El Paso per day. Interestingly, El Paso's on Election Day is much lighter than these other counties that we've talked about, but we have some extenuating circumstances. They've got a lot more people who are registering new than we see across some of these other counties. They had a little bit more capacity in that that second week, but their first week numbers are about what we see across the state. Per hour for El Paso, again, per hour is about the same, maybe a little bit lower than some of the counties we've talked about. Again, 2 point across the first week. Next county, Jefferson County. Jefferson, again, very similar to what we saw in El Paso County. They actually had a high Monday, which one of the highest Mondays in the state. Next, per hour. Again, very similar. They're even down below 2 in those early couple of days. And then this is the VSPC transactions across all of the days in which a VSPC could have been open. So a caveat from the first group that you saw. That only included the time in which you were statutorily obligated to be open. So under the statute, you had to be open on 10/24. Had to increase your capacity on 11/8, so on November 8th. But a county could open a VSPC on the day that they mail out their ballots. So if you mail out your ballots on the 17th or the 18th or the 19th, you could open your VSPCs immediately. So some counties had additional activity in that first week. That's kind of rolled into some of these numbers. And you also see in these numbers the provisional ballots that I was telling you about, which kind of make some of the calculations funky. You might remember I was talking about El Paso. So El Paso County had the highest percentage of new registrations among the large counties. Only a couple of counties, Garfield and Teller, had similarly high percentages of new registrants. But if you look at, like, Arapahoe had less than 10%. And because Arapahoe has less than 10%, they're spending far fewer hours trying to get people through new registrations, and they're just issuing ballots to existing or updating voters. And a lot of these counties that around them, around that size, are also in the 10 to 12 range. Interestingly, El Paso had fewer existing voters. So these are your easiest voters. These are the easiest ones to get a ballot to. They walk in. They say who they are. They just want a replacement. You hand it to them. So El Paso had fewer of those and more of the news. So that's why their numbers or their VSPC throughput was more complicated. Just in conversation with El Paso, I also know that they struggled to have size of locations which would allow them to have better throughput. And one of the things that, and it's so great that our Douglas County friends and election professionals are here today. Douglas County has a fantastic arrangement with their public school system, which allows them access to public schools on Election Day. And it's an amazing advantage that they have, because those are big facilities that have, great interconnectivity, and they have big parking lots, and everybody knows where they're at. They're, the center of the universe in the county. And so for that reason, they could get a lot more people through those places than other counties that didn't have access to schools. And schools are this just, deal breaker for many counties, which make the difference between an election which is really smooth, like Douglas had a great election, and other counties which, see lines because they just they don't have a big enough place to get people through them. So if you have any questions about this data, does anybody have any questions about this data? Yeah, Steve asked.
So, did you forecast how many you thought the percent new was going to be, so that for someplace like El Paso, where there are obviously long lines, I mean, was there some anticipation it was going to be this way? How do you prevent it from happening? Do you have any idea? Was it unusual? Do we have an unusually high number of new on that day relative to the days in the past?
You know, it's really hard to know. And the reason why it's really hard to know is because this was our first presidential election with same-day registration. Now, we had 2014, but really 2014 is not comparable. And so it's just hard to know. This is now the mark by which we will compare going forward. So we now have a ground floor to measure.
Well, and as someone who was El Paso County Clerk, would I have thought that we would have more new people voting in El Paso, both in raw number and percentage, than a more, what I would view as a more transient area of Denver and Arapahoe County? The answer is no. Now, I wasn't clerk at the time, but I know the staff pretty well there, and I don't think they anticipated that there would be, you know, almost twice the number in terms of people who would show up for the first time in that county compared to when you think of Denver, you think of apartments and condos and people who move in and out more frequently. And I know specifically from talking to them, they did not anticipate the large number of folks at Fort Carson who were actively participating in the process. So there were some surprises in this.
Jessica?
Jack,
can you?
Jessica Gamble Swanson. I think one of the other things to factor in and what we saw on Election Day were different processes for registering new voters. So El Paso had a system where they were not, for a long time, even though the lines were growing, were not passing out registration pages in line so that people could register. They were waiting till people got up to the desk. And then even then, not registering simultaneously into the computer, the voter would fill it out and then hand it to the clerk, and then the election judge would submit it. So I think when we're, as clerks and stuff, as you guys are talking in like best practices, I think that one just stuck out as a particularly slow way of doing that, which I think exponentially added to the, you got to register them, but yep, it was a long, inefficient way of doing it.
Okay.
Was just one note.
Matt Crane, Arapahoe County. And just so you know, to your question, Steve, I know many counties did, Arapahoe did, Denver County did, build projections based on time for each transaction at registration. In our case, we built it all around the longest transaction time so that we could build in cushions for the other transaction times as well. So a lot of counties are taking in that data now and working with it.
There's a lot of information on this one. Any questions about this slide? Okay, next. Then we did transactions by party, just so that you kind of understand how the transactions went across party lines. I think the slightly elevated Republican versus Democratic new registration probably is largely about El Paso County. El Paso County had 1,000 more people registering in that county than any other county did, pretty much.
Okay, so of all the election experts here, how many people thought same-day registration would help the Republicans more than Democrats? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Updates, pretty steady across state. Existing, pretty steady across the state. And then you'll notice that if you take this number, and this number, so 37.5, 38.4, and 37, and you average them out together, they should be around 37.5, but suddenly we go down to 36.4. That's because in this number, we're adding in the denominator, we're adding in those provisional ballots. So that's why that last percentage might not seem in character with those previous percentages, but it's because those provisional ballots are added into that total. And they're not measured across new, updating, or existing. Questions about this? Okay. So what we wanted to do now was to kind of give you a sense about what our current law is as it relates to VSPC requirements, and then show you the effect of that in this last election, and then the go forward. So this is our current statute. Counties that have 25,000 active electors have to have at least one VSPC open for every 30,000 active voters for early voting and every 15,000 active voters for election day. And then counties with 10,000 or fewer, or 10,000 to 25,000, then have to have one for early voting and at least three for election day. And counties that are smaller than that would be in the 1-1 category. So you could have one throughout the entire election. So that's the way the law reads. This was our population, the high population counties, so the most populous counties across the days of the election and how many VSPCs they had open during those days and what they were obligated to do by state law. So let me walk you through this. The active population, so this is active registered voters, and this is the mark by which you calculate VSPC number. That's set by the 2012 election, so it's set by each presidential election. In 2012, these counties had this many active registered voters, and because of that, the equation was to have that many VSPCs, which you see on the far end, which what I call statute. In 2016, this number went up because every single one of these counties increased in population. So for the go forward, the calculation will be based on a new number. So this was the number for this election. This number will be abandoned, and we'll have a new number for the following election. By the way, I'm going to show you that number in a minute. So on 10/24, that was the first day you were obligated to have a VSPC open. Denver had 13. El Paso County had 13. Arapahoe County with 11. Jeffco with 12. Adams with 9. Larimer with 7. Douglas 6. Boulder 7. Weld 5, Pueblo 5, and Mesa 3. Then I jump forward to the Friday before the election. And activity occurred between that. I'm not saying that no additional VSPCs happened during that time, but to understand it, I've collapsed it down into now there are this many VSPCs open in these counties.
And just to clarify, this is how many they open, not necessarily what the requirement was.
The requirement is over here.
Right.
So the requirement is that each of these four large counties had to have 11 open on early voting, and then 23, 22, 23 on. So early voting, you can see that every single county except for Arapahoe on the first day of early voting and Douglas throughout early voting, every single county was higher than they were statutorily obligated to do across every single one of these days.
And let me comment as to at least one of the reasons why. Occasionally something goes crazy. So you have a school that kicks you out at the last second. We had, in one of our prior elections, a roof start to collapse on one of our sites. And so we were scrambling to find a replacement site so we could meet the statutory requirement because we had the minimum. And we made the decision in El Paso, and we've shared that with other counties, and they have also shared it with their experiences, which also speak to it, which is you want to have at least a margin in case something happens so you still meet the statutory requirements. So that's why you see a lot of them at one more than the requirement or two more than the requirement, just to make sure if something did happen at one of those, you weren't then trying to scramble to find a replacement site in order to stay in compliance with the law.
And then you can see what the statutory requirement was on election day. This is 11-8, so on election day, every county was higher than the statutory requirement. Kind of understand in context what the requirement was for other elections, non-general elections. You can see that the primary requirement is also listed there, and it shows. And by the way, the primary requirement in statute is measured by how many DMVs you have in your county. Interestingly, it's not quite the same.
Yeah, and the theory with that in part is that counties choose how to allocate their DMVs to cover their population appropriately. And so there are counties like Pueblo that say all of our people live for the most part in one area and it doesn't make sense to have scattered sites in the area. And there's others that I think Adams has the most dispersed DMV sites, but if that's the decision you make as a county, then for elections you should make a similar decision. And that's true even for Denver, where the clerk doesn't control the motor vehicle sites.
Have you guys figured out how 108 is going to affect that line and what you're going to do with all the unaffiliated voters now being engaged?
The short answer of that is historically these VSBCs are almost totally deserted in primary elections. And so maybe the judges there might have to stay awake for longer periods of time. The high propensity voters who vote in a primary are usually voting by mail. They're not the ones who are same day registering. They're not the ones who are updating. They're the voters who participate all the time, and they do a pretty good job of maintaining an active registration. Plus, because they're voting, you know, three times every 2 years, they're staying pretty current. It's the ones who vote once every 4 years that things fall really into lapse, which is why you see so many updates. And the historic numbers, because we've had primary election cycles, including this one, and even when you have vigorously contested primaries, the VSBCs have been really deserted. And I know there's at least four clerks here who can speak to that if they think that's any different in their counties, but it's not. They're empty. So I don't think that changes it a lot. That same number, by the way, is the same number for coordinated elections, which had 1.4 and 1.6 million people vote in them.
Right.
I don't think you're going to have, if you have that many vote in the primary, there'll be more voting than most people anticipated. And that has handled the coordinated elections without any issues in any of the counties.
The next slide shows that same measure across medium sized and even the smallest population counties in the state. So Broomfield had two locations open during early voting. They were statutorily obligated to have one. They had 3-3-3 across those days when they were obligated by statute to have three on election day. You can see most everybody stuck to that formula, or at least pretty close. Garfield opened several locations on election day, even though they were only required to have three. Eagle had several locations open across all of those days, even though they were only required to have one, and then they ended up being in four on election day. And this captures the entire group, the universe of counties that are required to have one during early voting and three on election day.
So some of these are geographically spread out. Those of you who've been through Garfield County know that, you know, and there are different population centers that the commissioners and clerk wanted to make sure that the people of Silt and Glenwood Springs didn't all have to go to Rifle, and so they made decisions. You've got other counties like Logan that are all very centrally located, and the population centers are not dispersed at all. And so the counties really do vary in Colorado based on not just population, but the geography and the distribution of the population.
I also note down at the bottom here that of the 35 counties that are under 10,000 that were only required to have one, a couple of counties, Gunnison had three. Of course, Gunnison was very close to the mark to become, you know, obligated under the higher measure. And then Rio Blanco, San Miguel, and Yuma counties all opened an additional VSPC on Election Day. So the county just decided to do that additional place. Now I show you the new population, active registered based on the 2016 election. This is not in your packet because I prepared this like over lunch. So this came out after we had already printed them all out. But you can get it online because we've posted the new version online. The new active population in Denver is just slightly over 400,000. El Paso's at 388. Jefferson's at 384. Arapahoe's at 368,000. So under the current formula in the statute, they would have to have 13 places open. Denver would have to have 13 places open, VSPCs open on the first day of early voting, and 26 on election day. Steve, if you go back two slides, you'll see that on election day, Denver had 26 open. On early voting, they had 13 open. So they were anticipating the move that was going to happen with their population. How about that? They're like prescient. El Paso, Arapaho, and also were almost exactly in line with what they were going to be obligated to do following the 16 election. So go forward too. There you go. These, again, are the obligations under the new number. Almost everybody goes up slightly. You know, they have to add one or two VSPCs. Pueblo doesn't, but Mesa did. Mesa went up to three. So the next slide shows all the small counties or medium-sized counties and then into the smaller population counties. You'll note that of this list before, I said that there were 35 counties that fell into the 1-1 category. There are now 34 counties that fall into that category. Grand County is now the lowest population county that is above 10,000. They went from 9,500 voters to 10,300 voters, and they are now going to be obligated to open up three VSPCs on election day for the next general election. And I have exchanged emails with Sarah Rosine and seen emails that she's sent to Pam, and that's a pretty alarming development for her because she really only has one population center, Hot Sulphur Springs, and it's, you know, now she's going to have to find three places and more election workers than she formerly had. So that's my presentation of VSPC activity. Does anybody have any questions for me before I sit down and shut up? Hey, you're a great crowd. Thanks a lot. Tip your waitress. Okay, I'm going to hand it over to the secretary, who I know has some. Go forward.
Well, we wanted to give you the data by day and generally, but also by specific counties and where you talk about requirements. And we didn't break it down with all 64 counties, but we thought looking at the five big ones, which is really where the publicity was, would be an important part of your deliberations and discussions. And I know that some clerks have some specific input they want to provide, and I'll turn it over to the Clerks Association president to start, and Deb and Pam can chip in as you will, and also Merlin. So fire away.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
And let me add one thing. Implicit in what Jed said, these are minimums. Counties are free to choose higher numbers. Most of the large ones did a little bit. You also saw the scale up that most of them didn't wait till election day to open the larger number of sites. There's a number of factors for that. One of those is you have to have IT support to open these sites, and most clerk IT budgets and staffing levels don't allow you to simultaneously open a whole bunch of sites, and so you see the ramp up take place for a number of the clerks. And one of the reasons why most of them had most of the sites open by Monday is because it's just safer that way. So if there is an issue, you can figure it out before the voters show up at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. So there's some practical reasons why clerks and commissioners chose to open and fund more than was required and to do a different type of ramp up than is the minimum level in the statute. Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Matt Crane, Arapaho County Clerk and Recorder and the President of the Colorado County Clerks Association. I think my colleague from Logan County, Pam Bacon, who's our incoming president, we're going to tag team this a little bit, and I'll take it from the larger county perspective, and then Pam will tackle the medium-sized county. I think the data here is very telling. It certainly demonstrates a shift in actually not a shift, a continuation of how people have been voting here in Colorado, where but even before 1303, we saw more people going by mail, less people coming in person, certainly less people coming early. I think the data that we saw today is one part of that, but there's more to this question than just the data we saw today. Counties have a very difficult time finding locations that can serve as early voting locations for 2 weeks. It's becoming more and more difficult to find locations. A lot of schools are out now because of security concerns. The problem when we lose schools is we lose the big gyms where we have the ability to have more equipment in there. We're stuck in smaller locations where we can't put as much equipment in, which leads to longer lines. we have difficulty finding judges now as our elections become more sophisticated in terms of technology. The type of judge we need has changed. We need people who are much more comfortable with technology, and it's tougher to find people to work in these locations for two plus weeks, not to mention the training involved. The cost of running these locations has become increasingly expensive. For example, in Arapahoe County, when we look at early voting, I think we spent about $155,000 to do it. The first week cost us, and I consider for the way that Arapahoe County does it, I consider the first week Monday through the first Saturday. The second week is Monday to Friday, because on the second Saturday, we bring all of our locations online. So that really begins the election day phase for us. So for the first week of early voting, it cost us about $85,000 over the 6 days. We had just over 1,600 people come. The cost per vote for that first week of early voting was $52.17, which is astronomical. For the second week, it was $71,000. We were open one less day. We had just over 3,000 people show up, so the cost per vote was $23, which when you compare that to the cost per mail ballot cast, is astronomical as well. So cost is a huge has a huge ramification here, especially in counties where the budgets are getting tighter and tighter. We're having to compete more for dollars. You can make an argument that by changing the formulas, we can better utilize the taxpayer money that we have. I think the other thing we have to look at is the purpose of early voting, right? When early voting came into play, the idea was to provide greater access to the ballot in hopes of increasing participation. But as you look at it, especially now after this election, we see more and more studies coming out showing that early voting doesn't really change the needle on participation in elections. What it does is allow those of us who do vote a greater period to cast a ballot, but it doesn't do anything to really increase turnout. So I think there's a lot of things that we should consider with that too. So I think the data really shows, if we just go along with the data and these factors, I think you can make a really compelling argument that we could do away with the first week of early voting completely and still serve our voters, provide them great access to the ballot, and be very fiscally responsible. However, I would also make the argument that where we have our branch offices, Mr. Secretary, as you said, and we have the ability to issue ballots, if somebody comes into our branch offices, we're not going to turn them away. As a matter of fact, in Arapahoe County, I think other counties do this as well. As soon as we have the ballots ready for our UOCAVA voters, 45 days before the election, if somebody comes in and they say they're going out of town, we'll issue them a ballot at 45 days before, which kind of goes to my next point, I think, as the Secretary alluded to as well. I think we need to look at the floors and bringing the floors down, but I don't think we should throw away the fact that clerks do a great job of serving their communities. You see more and more clerks now working with stakeholders in their different counties to get input, to get feedback, and so I think that's something that's very important too. Clerks want their citizens to be able to get in and vote as easily as possible. So I think for the first week, it probably makes sense to go to something like we have in coordinated elections. Or maybe tie it to a floor that's much, much lower than it is right now. I think when we look at the second week of early voting, where it upticks a little bit, but still is nothing like we had in 2012, 2008, going back that way, I think a lot of what Senator Tate had in his VSPC reduction bills the last 2 years in the legislature, one for every 75,000 active voters, makes a lot of sense for that second week now, instead of having it one for every 30,000. So in Arapahoe County, that would take our floor from 11 vote centers to 5 for that second week. And then when we look at Election Day, we know there's an uptick there. We see the uptick start for us on the Saturday before, which is why we open on the Saturday before, when the statute only calls for us to open up on Election Day. I think the level for Election Day makes sense. I think if we were to reduce the 2 weeks before, I think it's reasonable to say that instead of opening up the Election Day locations on Tuesday, maybe we mandate that they're open on Monday and Tuesday. And then, like in my case in Arapahoe County, we would still open on the Saturday before. Keep that threshold the same. However, I think, Martha, getting to your point, one area that we really need to focus on now is not the number of locations. That's an archaic way to look at it. It's the throughput. And so the Secretary and I, we were speaking yesterday, Pam Anderson was there, and Wayne put forth the idea, maybe if we can demonstrate that we have so much equipment, So if there's an average number of equipment that you have in your VSPC, if you can double that capacity in a specific VSPC, then maybe that VSPC can count as two locations towards your required number by statute. So just some different things. Another benefit to that is that, believe it or not, if we can reduce, because it is hard to find judges, because it is hard to find IT support for 25 locations, believe it or not, if we reduce the number of locations, but we can still demonstrate the same throughput on election day, it gives counties greater quality control over the operation in each of the VSPCs. So I think there's a lot of reasons when you look at it. First week, if we go down to number of branch offices or some formula that keeps it in that neck of the woods. Second week, I think the 75,000 that Senator Tate has recommended on a couple of locations. Election day, if we keep it the same, but allow, if we can demonstrate greater capacity, that would count as two facilities towards our requirement there. And with that, I will turn it over to Pam Bacon to kind of give a perspective from the – yeah, Steve.
So you rattled off a lot.
Yeah.
I have like five questions.
Sure, sure. That's it.
So when you look at the total 214 of VSPC votes, mm-hmm. 50,000 occur up until the Sunday before the election day. Mm-hmm. The other 150,000 are in those two-day periods. Mm-hmm. Do you have the ability – if you looked at this and said, first of all, I agree, the first week you should just say no, mm-hmm. right? Because there's so few that actually occur that week. The question is, if they start being pushed into the second week uh-huh. and really look at throughput, could you do this all on 2 or 3 days instead of one whole week? And or do you have the ability to have the locations for less than a week?
So the location question is a huge issue for a lot of counties, not being able to use the schools to do that. And that's one of the things that we'd like to address. It probably makes the most sense in whatever legislation may come out of this conversation. One of the things that we've tossed around is if there's a facility that takes any kind of public funding like schools, that they should make some portion of that facility available for voting. So to your question, I mean, it all gets back to the throughput issue. If we get a location big enough, for the loads that we're seeing, you know, we can squeeze any amount through. It's just finding the locations that are big enough and finding the people that are skilled enough to be able to man those locations to be able to meet the throughput requirements.
I mean, when you're looking at it, we got three state senators sitting here, mm-hmm. $50, $52 a vote in that first week. I don't know how we can ask the people of Colorado to be thinking that level of cost just for convenience for one-fifth of the total votes that are cast this way, as well as looking at the $23 per vote just even in the last week. If we can concentrate that down to 2 or 3 days with so many people voting on that last day, so many, I mean, it's more than half, why wouldn't you look at doing a 2 or 3 day deal? You know, I mean, there's political issues involved, but I still think, right. Can you do it if it was only 2 or 3 or 4 days that you had in the end? Could you physically get it done without increasing your cost because of the need for more machines, et cetera, and people?
We could. I think we'd really have to study throughput, and we'd really have to take a good look at the number of vote centers then. I'd want to take another look at the threshold of vote centers for that 2 or 3 day period.
And let me add something on that. It's one of the reasons that first week is so low is because if you call your clerk and say, hey, I moved, I need a new ballot, they continue to mail ballots out throughout that week. So the convenience issue you referenced is still there, regardless of whether you have a polling place open. And I emphasize that you can go into that clerk's election office throughout this period. And in fact, there were transactions the week prior to this that we weren't graphing out because they were fairly small, where you could go into where a few people, that first day ballots get mailed, they show up and say, I'm flying to Europe, I need to vote. And so that in-person necessity still exists. Let me give you a qualitative example. The best place in western El Paso County for voting in Manitou Springs is the City Hall. The City Hall has a beautiful wood-floored room that is maybe 4 times the size of this room. It is huge. It is wonderful. It's a beautiful place to have voting. It is also where they have wedding receptions, and they rent it out Friday and Saturday nights for wedding receptions. and Saturday for events, and Sunday for events. So getting it for Monday, Tuesday, relatively easy. The city is not willing to forego the revenue to take it out of the reception market for those prior weeks. And so it's a site that if you want to use, you get it for those last 2 days. And it's indicative of big spaces in buildings because lots of, you know, whether you're a city hall or another building, you're using your space for things. If you're a place of worship, you usually have your big events either on Saturday or Sunday. And so you're not available for, you know, someone who says, I want to set up for 3 weeks. And so it does affect the type of sites you can get, which was one of the issues in terms of the small community rooms. A lot of those VSBCs were in this last time.
Just last question. And looking at the targeted votes, the cost per vote, right? It's $3.1 million for that last day and $750,000 for the first week for the votes that happen in this time. Do you guys have a target? I mean, should it be under $15 a vote if we do it right? Should it be under 10? Have you looked at it as a clerks association on what your targets might be?
We've discussed it. We haven't really come up as a target as an association. I think the, you know, the mail ballot vote is usually, I think, between $2 to $3 a vote. The in-person is always going to be more expensive. We'd have to chew on that, to see where that would come to. But it should definitely be, it should be less than it is. And I would argue, even if we reinvest that money in the elections process, it is so much better spent in other areas when we know, that the participation during that first week, especially, is so low. I think there's better things that we can do with that money, even with what we do in elections.
Pam Bacon, Logan County Clerk and Recorder. So I'm speaking on medium-sized county issues that we've seen in the 2014-2016 elections. 2016 was a very successful election for us. We implemented the Dominion system for our voters, as did 17 other counties in the state. We had a record high turnout of 86% active voter turnout. Under statutory formula, Logan County is a medium-tier county requiring three VSPC locations on election day. Like other counties, Logan County's major population is centralized in Sterling, with 79% of the population centered in the Sterling and the surrounding area of Sterling. Smaller towns, about seven exactly, are spread throughout the county, ranging from 76 people to 408 people in those areas. So setting a VSPC location in one of the smaller town only services that small town. Most people in our county either work or shop in Sterling. They vote their mail ballot or even drop off their vote in Sterling. 0.5% of my voters voted in the other two VSPCs that we had to open on election day, only 0.5%. It's important to remember that every active voter already has a mail ballot that has been mailed to their address. Population centralization is not just a medium or a small county issue. This happens in larger counties as well, and I've heard from some of those people who have the same problem in a large county. Our data, we had 49% of our people deposit in our 24/7 drop box. 16% mailed their ballot in, and 18.5% used the VSPC main office, which is my county office, to drop their ballot off. 2016 general election, I was required to have three VSPC locations on that day. My main office, which is what we use for all our elections as our main VSPC, we, four people, four judges, myself was one of them, we had 349 in-person voters at that location. My other two locations, we had 46 people in one and 61 people in the other. The other two locations totaled 107 people all day long. The statewide average per hour was 39 transactions per hour. My other two locations barely beat the per hour in an all-day long 12-hour cycle. Logan County is not only the only county with this issue. There are nine of the 16 medium-sized counties that responded to a survey of information with the same issues about Election Day voter turnout at their other locations that they're required to provide. It's not cost-effective for the turnout, and it also is too much for the county due to either demographic issues, population centralization, facility issues, connectivity issues. All of those have to play a factor. I believe that voters can be can receive service through drop boxes and VSPCs located in the population centers, focusing more on quality than quantity. Due to every county being diverse, different geographic issues, less population, concentration issues, size, location of facilities, connectivity issues, and voter turnout, we have to make sure that we, when we're setting up things, we have to know that all this is a problem. A three-size tier section based solely on active voter population doesn't fit every county, and we need to realize that when we're making those. And every clerk and recorder works diligently to try to make sure that they have enough VSPCs, but when the bottom level is too much for your area for any of those situations, then we need to have some form of way to either change that or ask for, maybe through the Secretary of State's office, some sort of, at each election we could talk to them and they could say, yeah, you don't need three or whatever this situation occurs. The CCCA has collected data for each election under our current model, and we'll bring all the data to the table to responsibly address the requirements directed at all these issues. Us as clerks look forward to putting everything on the table, including drop boxes, number of locations and days, capacity, to see what we can collectively work together to come up with the citizens, a solution for the citizens as a whole that would best fit everybody. But just so that we all understand that we need to make sure that each county has some sort of say in it, because my county is obviously not the same as another medium-sized county, because my population is all in one area, although several counties and some of the larger counties also have that same problem.
Let me just clarify one of the things Clerk Bacon said, which is each of those other sites were fully staffed, which meant that there was fewer staff at the main office to process the majority of the people. I think it's about 80% roughly who came through that main office. So you had fewer staff to service them because you had dispersed them to these other sites. And so that's kind of what we wanted to present. And Matt, back to you.
Thanks. Just to add in, so I know we're focused on VSPC specifically right now, but I think there's other things as a part of this conversation that we probably need to look at too. As Pam said, I think we need to look at our ballot drop boxes, and do we need more of those? Can we be, you know, more? We see more people going that way, 70% using drop boxes, so maybe that's a target area for us. I think, you know, when we talk about access, and we're really proud of the access we have here in Colorado, maybe one of the things we look at is the day that we mail ballots. Maybe we push that a little more to allow voters more time with the ballot before Election Day, and help around some of the issues with the post office and having to deliver on Columbus Day. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we can do here now that we have good data, not just around VSPCs, but to really make sure that we're serving our voters in the way that the data shows they'd like to be served.
So let me comment on the timing phrase, because that was one of the issues we tried to address last year in the cleanup bill. We got some pushback from folks, and so we did change the law to where it's Columbus Day. You can mail the Friday before, but that's the only instance. And I see that Ms. Tierney has a hand up, so let me.
Thank you, Martha Tierney. I have a couple of reactions and a couple of questions. So just at the outset, I'll say that I am not a fan of slashing early vote, certainly not down to 2 or 3 days. I think we, even under any analysis, you had 50,000 people vote before the last 2 days. So if you took away early voting, you would have to, and we saw 2 and 3 hour lines. Let's not forget that. So you would have to push 50,000 more people through in those last 2 or 3 days. And I don't see that happening. I hear the cost issues. I frankly think that that's a price we pay in our democracy. But I do think there is a productive conversation about citing, making it easier for clerks to find locations, looking at capacity. I don't think that formulas that just mandate numbers without taking into account capacity make sense, because if you're just putting a place somewhere to check that box, that's not productive. So I definitely think that's a good conversation to have. I think we need more data for that conversation. And I'm not trying to fault the data that you presented. I think it was really great. But I do think that there is a more granular analysis here about where we have the need and what size locations we had in those locations, in those areas this time. How can we improve upon that? Some of the places where we only saw sites open in the last 2 days were the locations where there were the 2 and 3 hour lines. And so is that an issue to look at? Those are the locations maybe where we need to have those places open for long periods before the election, because those are high demand locations. I also, to Clerk Bacon's point, I think there is an interesting question about those middle tier counties where some have one population center, but others have 2 or 3. And so is there a way to address the capacity issue and mandate a capacity in the one population center counties, and then a number formula in the counties where there are two population centers, and particularly in those counties where there's a mountain pass in between those population centers, where it really would not work at all to just have one VSPC. So I think what we know now is that this is not a conversation or a piece of legislation that is just a numbers game. There are a lot of other factors to this that we really have to look at, and I'm certainly interested in looking at them. But I do think we need more data.
So when you say more data, because we heard what folks said last time, we tried to give you way more data than you had last time. So give us an idea of what kind of data you're looking for, if you would, please.
Okay. Thank you for that. This is Martha Tierney. And I appreciate that this is a lot. But I think that in the larger counties, we need to look at where locations actually were in the county, and then what the traffic was at those locations, because averaging it out, while helpful from a bird's eye view to sort of think about this initially, it's not enough, because we saw the lines. For example, let's just use Denver as an example. You know, the lines were in Montbello, and the lines were in Stapleton, and the lines were in downtown. So we need to look at that to figure out, okay, where in those locations, we need better sites, more capacity, maybe. And that might be 25 sites, but we need sites in those high demand areas, and in those high demand areas, they have to be have a large throughput capacity. And I know that is one of the hardest things for the clerks, is finding the locations. And so that's something that I think would be really important to work on from a legislative standpoint. Is there a way to help clerks with the siting of VSPCs?
Okay. And I appreciate that. I've got a couple folks who want to make some comments. Let me push back just a little bit with you. We may not be the one that ought to be making that decision, because that sounds very much like an issue that clerks should be having with their local party leadership, with their county commissioners, in terms of what is the right thing. I would hate to have, having spent most of my life at the local level, hate to have the state saying, okay, Clerk Johnson, you're going to have a site in within 0.2 miles of this, and it will be a 50 by 100 site, because mandating those type of things in legislation is pretty fraught with the challenge that you're not going to necessarily know what you're doing and how to adjust. I will tell you that as a former clerk, what we would do is we would look at who voted last time, and we would plot that on geo maps, because large counties have a little more sophistication and they can do things. And we would say how many people, and we did this before when we cited our VSPCs, we looked at the number of people that this VSPC was the closest for. And now that you know who actually voted the VSPC, you've got a little more data, at least for this election. But I'd be a little wary of the state trying to dictate precisely where every voter service and polling center is, because we don't know the communities at the state level as well as those local elected officials and the local party leaders do. And so that would be a hesitancy I have. But let me pass it over to a couple of folks who had some comments. Judd.
One thing about that data is sort of supplements what the secretary was just saying. We at the score level of data, so what we have in the voter registration database, is disconnected from where the activity happens. So we know it happened in a VSPC, but we don't know which VSPC it is. We would have to develop that in score to have any knowledge about where the activity is happening. Now, I suspect that Amber knows that, and Jennifer probably knows that, and Sherry probably knows that. So it's that we can rely on the people that do this activity at the county level, and then they can use that information to make really good decisions about where they want to put additional spaces. And I just think back to the 2012 election, where we had CenterPoint was an extraordinary magnet. I mean, it seemed to bring in every single person in your region. Well, out of that, Matt Crane had additional sites very close to CenterPoint to meet that expected additional load that was not covered in 2012 and had long lines. So that's just sort of a part of the evolution of and use of data on the county side that we really just can't supplement.
So Ms. Tierney, as is rarely the case, I agree with you, probably 2 to 3 days is too short. But I like to start low in negotiations with you, as you know. how long ahead of time are locations picked?
Are they picked?
Yeah, how long ahead of time are they picked?
Oh, we try to have them just as a best practice as early in the spring as we can, because it takes a lot of time then to be able to go and make sure they're set up for the internet connectivity, testing, the whole nine yards. So we try to go, you know, April, May, but sometimes it bleeds a little bit into the summer.
Well, and you've got wedding receptions being scheduled in these rooms and other things. So if you're not in there quick, they're going to get taken by somebody else.
Well, and the other reason I asked the question was because Stapleton's a great example, right? I mean, every time you drive through Stapleton, there's another housing development and another housing development. And you got to anticipate, if you do it too early, you know, how many do you really need in Stapleton? Because that place is growing so fast that, you know, you might make a mistake in terms of what you put there. I thought Pam's point about geography, you know, should there be a difference between flat ground in the eastern plains and mountain passes, as you mentioned, Martha, in terms of the rules and where we do that? Because right now, you know, today, if we were voting today, I-70 is closed because of snowfall problems. It probably doesn't happen in November all that often, but you never know. So should there be a difference between the rules for flat ground areas and the different geographies in the state as part of the process? And lastly, do we ever ask voters what they'll tolerate? How long they'll wait, or how do we just decide what our productivity needs to be in these voting centers? What are they looking for? Is 15 minutes too much? Is an hour too much? Do we know? Have we ever asked?
We don't. It's very anecdotal, and it varies by county. Each county has their own different metric for that. And, you know, when you go on election day, you know, I run around with party representatives from both parties in my county, and whenever we would get to a line, we'd always interact with folks. You know, how's it going? You okay? The vast majority of people said, you know, either we knew we waited till election day, so we're okay with the line. Or we're excited to be here on election day and we're okay with the line. And then a smaller part where we're upset about having to wait. But then most of them would admit, you know, darn it, I should have either, you know, come earlier or just voted my mail ballot. Surprisingly, a lot of people got out of line and said, well, my mail ballot's in my car. I'll just go get that and vote it. So,
well, and that's actually the article in the Boulder Daily Camera where people were frustrated with the process and they said, well, I gave up and I went back and voted my mail ballot and got that and turned it in. I will tell you that clerks very much do look at geography in making those decisions. We looked in El Paso where the higher snowfalls likely were and so tried to be considerate of that in terms of the types of locations. Matt.
So I will say when we take a look at projections and talking with clerks and election administrators around the state, you know, we spent a lot of time before on our projections, and our projections this year across the board came out pretty well. Talking with Amber, I know hers were pretty spot on. Ours were pretty spot on. Again, where we run into problems is the location. If we know we're going to get hit at a spot where we have a small room, that's why you've seen more counties get more aggressive through social media, advertising wait times. Hey, don't go here. You know, there's other places to be able to go. I think it's, as Mr. Secretary, as you said, I think it's so important to give counties the flexibility, greater flexibility in serving their population. I think the other thing, Martha, and I hope that my comments before when we talk about cost per vote, I should provide the caveat that that's just for Arapahoe County, so that'll be different across the counties. But when we talk about the cost per vote, again, it's, my point is not that we shouldn't invest in our election process. I think that we can find better ways to spend that money. For instance, I think one of the things we learned after this election, or it was reinforced after this election, I think the counties really want to get together and find a way to come up with an alternative to using provisional ballots should we lose score on election day, right? Because if score goes down for any amount of time on election day, it has a, you know, it's like compound interest, right? It hurts you. So what can we do to come up with something where we can keep pushing voters through without having to go to a provisional ballot, still processing people through in a reasonable amount of time? And so I would say the money is better spent looking for ways to enhance what we do in that way than necessarily, you know, using it in the first week of early voting when it's a dud. So I don't mean to say that we shouldn't still spend it here. I just think we can be smarter with the way that we spend it.
Deb.
This Deborah Johnson, Denver. Judd, I think I would like to see a whiteboard so we can see all these suggestions that are being made so that we can kind of keep track of them. So just a suggestion. Anyway, number one, I don't agree with getting rid of the first week. I would like to see the requirements adjusted so that we are not required to have as many locations, but I still think we need to have that first week. I would like to see the requirements, and I'm speaking for large counties. I don't want to, they have a whole different animal with small and medium counties. So for Monday and Tuesday, Monday before election and Tuesday on election day, I think we should up the number, go to like one per 15,000 so that we have more sites. I also agree with what Matt is saying in terms of the
drop-off locations. If you're going to adjust it down, then you saw where people like to drop it off. I think we need to up that number exponentially in terms of the drop-offs. We have many in Denver County, so that that happens. I swear Denver is.
Well, for once, I disagree with Deborah on a few things, but and I really want to endorse what Pam said and Matt as well. I do disagree emphatically with a Monday comparable to a Tuesday kind of voter locations. And I do that based on the fact that we rely so heavily on the school systems for the Tuesday election situation. I pray that they'd go to statute and force this accommodation to all counties that we happen to have by virtue of some good negotiation by Sherry and my predecessor with our school district. It facilitates a facility that is large, where you can be efficient in operating. It provides a facility that's already ADA compliant. It's already a facility that's got all the technical access issues that you need. It's taken care of. And so I really wish that we could move to forcing this. California and other states have this. It wouldn't be unique. And I wish that Colorado would step up and require the schools to provide, go to an in-service day on election day, and let that open for the voters. It's not a case of having students there, so your security issues change. I think it's a very, very profound change that we could make and should make. We've alluded to the differences between the counties. You have differences between not just the topography between different counties, but you also have a big difference between the geography, the lay of it. We've got counties that are 175 miles from one end to the other. We got, I don't know, half a dozen maybe counties that are like that. You look at Logan County, and it's relatively square. Douglas County is relatively square. 90% of our population lives within 10 miles of one spot in the county. Arapahoe County is long and slim. And I don't like the idea of trying to come up with a formula, be it one for every 20,000 or one for every 10 or one for every 50,000 for locations, because each of us have different situations. We have different available facilities. Some counties have a large facility that's readily available. Some don't have. Some have many small facilities. And so I hate trying to force that into a formula. I know everybody in the legislature would like to say, here's a nice, pretty formula, now I'll comply. But I would much rather that we could evolve to a situation where the county clerks know what their county looks like. They know what's available for facilities. They know what's available for the constraints, be it the snowstorms or whatever. We all know our counties. And the bottom line is we screw it up and we're out. There is a check on it. But I would, even if we had to submit a plan to the Secretary of State's office, it says this is where we want to put our facilities and have them check it off. That makes much more sense than a situation where we need to come up with another location to check the box. I look at our early voting right now. We had 6 early voting locations. They were well located. We had 2 that were closer together than I would like, but the second was kind of to comply. I look at the new numbers. Now I need to come up with another place to check the box. I don't need another place. I don't have reason to put another place. But if we're living with a formula, I'm faced with it, let alone the small county or other large counties. The Monday in particular, I do not want to be, if you force us into a Monday VSPC situation, you void our relationships with the schools. And I'm lost.
we start over. So I think we've got to be able to look at counties as counties and with each of the problems in each of the counties separately. Cost is a subtle difference, but it's the reality of it. Now, I am opposed to being open that first week. It's worthless as far as I'm concerned. The second week does have benefits in the early days in that it gives judges time to get ramped up mentally and get in the groove for when the crunch hits. So there is some value in the Monday, Tuesday of those weeks. Got a couple other things, but I'll pass for right now and get it back to the next person.
Hi, good afternoon. Just a couple things that, in addition to what the clerks have all said, on the facility piece, in terms of technology, I mean, the other, it isn't just finding a location, it is also the technology that supports that. And one thing that we ran into in Denver, Montbello and Stapleton are good examples of this. They're both level one rec centers, and we have what's called fiber, not T1s. It's actually more advanced than T1s out there, but I will tell you this, we actually were at full capacity for all of the computers that we had at those sites, regardless of gymnasium. And the main reason that we were at full capacity is because of the amount of the fiber that it takes to run the 24/7 surveillance cameras on the 24-hour boxes. The reason I point that out, though, is that there's significant implications for rules that get imposed, and that is one area. I mean, I would like to throw that in because it's still not, frankly, a very valuable use of funds. We've talked, you know, Matt talked about the cost of VSPCs his first week. That is slightly less than what the cameras cost us on a yearly basis to store 24/7 surveillance, run that through our network, and all of that. So what I would just say is that while we're talking about sites, while we're talking about facilities, I would throw a couple of these other pieces into there because, you know, Montbello, Stapleton, good examples. I can roll out a few more switches if I'm not running 24/7 camera video footage through our fiber network, and that is at all of our sites. And then the other piece, the costs on VSPCs for the first week, I think we need to have first week services. There's a few reasons for that. Done this a long time. I think that we're not just providing services inside the Voter Service Center. A lot of counties, a lot of the metro counties in particular, are providing drive-up drop-off. I know in Denver we had 12 drive-up drop-offs in operation. Those folks are going in and out, exchanging with people inside the site. We collected a good number of ballots there. Over 2 million ballots came in prior to Election Day across the state, and that didn't just happen at 24-hour boxes. It happened with ballots being dropped off. So when we talk about costs per vote center, I think we also need to factor in the mail ballots dropped off at those locations in addition to in-person transactions, because there are way more transactions happening than those that just come out of score. So that's an important consideration. And then on the facilities piece, I think the government buildings distinction and if counties did have support, whether it's universities or what have you, from state law to utilize some of those locations, it would be helpful. But like in Denver, I mean, we use a lot of rec centers, we use a lot of libraries, and especially the rec centers that are tier one locations, they can't relocate services for 2 weeks. The gymnasiums are a big source of revenue for different events, and it just isn't necessarily going to work as well. So just a few more thoughts. I think the technology piece is key to a lot of this whole facility discussion. It isn't just a matter of standing up a box. It actually requires a lot to get these VSPCs and a lot of security around it. And then the one final thing I would say, and this might speak to medium and small counties, but one thing that we are considering for the future, and we considered doing it for 2016, is a mobile site. We're already doing mobile sites for all of our group residential facilities. We're taking out the equipment with the new voting system that is now statewide. It's more mobile, it's more usable. We can take it, set it up at the group residential facilities. So there might be something there to figure out and figure out how to count those in terms of hours of services, or even a trailer type of situation where it can be sort of put in various locations on different days. That actually serves the voters in a more meaningful way instead of just one stand-up location. So I think there's a lot of ideas, and Colorado's always led the way in terms of election innovation, so I hope that that continues with some of this discussion here. So thanks.
Senator Fenberg.
Steve Fenberg, Senate District 18. I just wanted to add a couple of things. So, Judd, to your question about what other, maybe it was you, Mr. Secretary, what other data would be helpful? I think we're drawing a lot of conclusions, and there is quite a bit of data to draw conclusions from, but it's probably not the full picture. And a couple of things that I would suggest is not just how many people are voting in that first week, but who are they and why are they doing it? And would they actually just, you know, if we got rid of that first week or it was limited or something, would they actually be the type of person that would just show up that following week? And I maybe we know that, but maybe it's not compiled in a good way. But all I would say is $50 per vote does sound like a pretty compelling argument. However, without knowing who those people are, it's hard to place judgment on if it's a service we still think is worth it. It may be people that otherwise wouldn't vote or are certain populations. And so I think it's an important data set to have if possible. The other thing sort of related to cost per vote, I think it'd be interesting to have previous election years cost per vote as well. Because I think we're saying some high numbers that seem kind of egregious, but I assume it was much higher per vote before 1303. And I might be wrong on that. And if clerks have other thoughts, it'd be interesting just to compare previous years as well. The other thing in terms of data that Mr. Secretary, I know you know I am interested in is wait time data. Just because I think we talk about what is tolerable, where are the waits, and at least from my viewpoint, it seems like my idea of where there are waits are based on what I see on Twitter election day, not necessarily on some like comprehensive report or data set that is comparing apples to apples across counties where it's really easy to be able to say where there are waits, what's causing it, and what is tolerable for a voter. I also think we could probably talk for a long time around if 15 minutes is tolerable. Anything over 15 minutes, and surely once you get to an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, if we're getting there, people are leaving. And that's information that's probably just not knowable. But I think, you know, even if the person that's in line says, yeah, I know I procrastinated, I'm willing to wait 15 minutes. When it's longer than that, there's undoubtedly people that are just leaving and not actually showing back up to vote, most likely, especially if it's on election day. And then in terms of other data that would be useful to have, I think, I don't know if this is available in a central place, but the number of staff, number of check-in tables, check-in computers, and all that kind of stuff per county. So right now it does seem pretty difficult to measure throughput and to set some sort of standards for counties. But I think with that data, along with wait times, along with how many locations you have in the population that you have, I think then you could get probably a rounder picture of what types of resources you need in order to reduce lines and make sure you're serving everybody in the county.
Let me try to answer a couple of those, Senator. First, the cost per vote substantially lower in the presidential election than in the gubernatorial election, because the numbers you saw here are significantly more than the number of people who voted in person during that first week. And it costs, having the site open means, my view as clerk, and other clerks may have different views, means four people, and there's two Democrats and there's two Republicans. And the reason I say four is because at some point, the Democrat and Republican have to go to the bathroom and you have to have another member of their party to replace them there. So whether one person votes, so in the gubernatorial election, we had 60 sites, 60 hours of voting. We had 12 sites on the first Saturday open for 5 hours, 60 hours. We have five people vote on that first Saturday. I did the cost per vote. It translated to, if everyone voted at that cost, that would be over half the county's budget for the entire year for all services, including sheriff, jail, and everything else. So the cost in a presidential were actually lower. So the numbers you're seeing are lower numbers per vote. than you'd see in a gubernatorial, because the same requirement exists for clerks and sites in presidential elections and gubernatorial elections, even though we know that, well, in this case, there's a difference of almost 900,000 voters between the two. On the why someone votes that, we have no reliable data. I can give you a few anecdotes from folks, but nothing that's going to tell you why. And I not really that much is going to tell you who. I mean, we can figure out. No, but I mean,
I bet you Steve and Martha could tell us.
We could tell you which, you know, we could come up with a party registration breakdown and we could do things like that. But, and we could actually, you could track the people that voted it. But in terms of, you know, what they're like demographically, there's very little data because we don't collect a lot of that data in this state. We don't know what race they are. Now, you guys in your party apparatus may have the ability to give that additional information. I do think that one of the things we can do, though, is work on getting this stuff applied in terms of the score users in there, which is the check-in stations that Jed was referencing in there, because I think that is data we can get. Because there is a huge difference between a site that has a single check-in place and a site that has 10 check-in places. And I think that is something that we can get. But in terms of the rest of it, I will tell you, Jed was whispering to me, the presidential commission that just under President Obama that went through this process said 30 minutes is the reasonable time that people, that's kind of their time frame at which people will do that. But again, this is data that's national in nature. Remember, in Colorado, we have a very different model. You already have a ballot. Over half of those people who voted had a ballot. And so comparing our number directly to a national sense, meaning that if I'm in that line, it's in large part because I chose to be in that line. I got the ballot and I didn't want to do anything with it. In some cases, my kid used it as a coloring project or whatever the case may be. But we're the only state that operates both types of voting in a complete sense. The other mail ballot states don't allow you to vote in person in the same way we do. And so Washington, Oregon don't have that same type of model that we do. But I, you know, in terms of the number of people who are processing, I think that is data we can get. But that's kind of my initial reaction to a couple of those. By the way, I tell Denver, you don't have to run the fiber of all the 24/7 back to your central place. That's a choice Denver makes. You can do it remotely. That's what many counties do, but that's your choice. Elena, you haven't spoken yet.
I appreciate what you're saying. The cost per vote piece, though, I was mostly referring to cost per vote, not from presidential to gubernatorial, but both of those elections versus the equivalent before 1303 passed, just for context of, does this new system, is $50 per vote under this new system totally egregious to how the old system was that we ran for quite a while, or is it increased cost? Does that make sense?
$50 per vote is dramatically increased over the average, certainly from any other time. I mean, if you just take it out, $50 times 2 million voters would be, what, $100 million? And I'm telling you, we can run a primary election statewide for less than 10. So, it's dramatically different. But
so the precinct model was cheaper?
Than this first week of early voting, yes. Remember, that's the first week.
Yeah, I'm more sort of, I'm saying it could be good context to compare the models just to know what direction we're heading in terms of cost to run an election.
Actually, online at Accountability in Colorado Elections, which is a link at the Secretary of State's website, we have all the cost data from past elections as well. And the cost per voter varies dramatically because large counties like Denver, El Paso, and Arapaho and Jefferson have much lower cost per voters than a county that has, you know, we have counties that have a cost per voter of 10 times what it is in the large counties, and you can see that all on there. So that historical data, to the extent we have it, is there. To the extent we don't have it, it's not there. Elena.
This is Elena Nunez. I guess I'd be interested in looking at the flip of the question that Senator Fenberg posed, which is who's waiting to vote in person. My sense, and we're still going through the information just anecdotally from our nonpartisan voter protection program, was that we would talk to voters who needed a service, and in the process of talking to them, there weren't locations available where they were. Or there were locations, but they weren't open late enough or they didn't open early enough. So they had to wait until there were either more locations put online or till election day, which is the one day where there's 12 hours of voting guaranteed. So I'd be interested to just look and see, is there anything about the services that are being offered, particularly that first week, that's just not meeting the needs of people who, for whatever reason, need to vote in person? So that's one piece of information. In terms of, I think, other options, I really like the idea that Amber raised of looking at mobile sites, because I think that could get to this just realization that we know there are places where you may not need to have a full center there for the full two-week period, but people in those communities need services. So are there creative ways to get services to those people? I think that's worth looking at. Another thing that I think hasn't been mentioned is that based on the numbers, we saw a pretty high turnout on Saturday, and the requirement is only that they're open for 4 hours. And again, based on our experience talking to voters, I think expanding that and then also looking at evening hours and hours that are outside of traditional work hours is important to think about how are we getting services to voters at a time when they can actually take advantage of them. And then I guess the final point, and I think that we've been dancing around this a little bit, but I'd be interested to hear from the clerks either how they plan or if it's possible. We know that there's scaling that can happen within a site. Is there more we can do with that? So you may not need the large ballroom at a location for the two-week period, but is it possible to use a smaller portion of that site, or are there other rooms available that could be used for a portion of the period and then escalate to a larger location? And is that working? Can we do more of that? And does that help us get to providing more demand without saying it's all or nothing? Because I think we're talking about, you know, you either have a location or you don't, but it all comes back to capacity and throughput, and election day or even the Monday or Friday is not the same as the first week. So there's got to be some scaling even within that. And then finally, I guess I would echo Senator Fenberg's point. I think we have to look at the average cost per vote for the entire model, because there are increased costs with some the way some voters choose to vote, but there's also cost savings. And overall, are we creating a more efficient system? And are we providing the services that voters need? And I think that's the balance we need to figure out, because if there are gaps or people who can't conveniently vote, then it's not worth the cost savings to say, well, we've got it down to, you know, $35 a vote or $15 a vote or $2 a vote or whatever. It needs to be something that provides services that voters can use.
Okay. Let me respond to a couple of those. Yes, clerks are using creative ways to address needs. So, for example, Yuma County, where you have the county seat in Ray as a result of some vote buying that occurred years ago for pickled pig's feet and a quart of whiskey, the largest population center in the county is Yuma. And so the clerk does go, and they do some, they take over a room in the library on, I forget which day, but they go over there early. And so you do have clerks around the state that are using innovative things to go and show up in a place that might not be a long-term site, but that allows them to come in and serve a need for voters in that. So you do see that happening already. Some may want to do mobile sites. Others believe their voter population wants to know where they are so they don't have to keep looking each time. And if you put them on a envelope, the return envelope, it's really easy to figure it out. And some places prefer that. So I think having the flexibility to do that, and we'll continue to support that flexibility for the counties that want that. There are counties that are doing the escalation you talked about, where they use a smaller room and then move into the larger room. What that means is that the IT system is having to be reset, and you can do a few of those, but because of the IT requirements for the connectivity, you can't, most counties don't have the capacity to move every site during that time, but they are using it in some instances. And for me, the cost issue is one of how do we best use the dollars we're allocating now to serve the most voters possible. And so, you know, depending on which county you're looking at, there are differences in the pre-1303 and the post-1303. And yes, we fell from third in turnout to fourth in turnout under the new model. But I think the focus for this group really ought to be how do we best serve the voters with the dollars we have? Because unless there's some new source of dollars that I don't know about, the counties are already going to have an increased cost because of 107, 108, and it may be a dramatically increased cost because of 107. I want to make sure we get the chance to hear from the members of the committee that haven't spoken yet, and then I'll turn it back to some others. But I noticed, I'm told that behind me is another clerk somewhere. Is that true? Ah, Clerk Hall, Boulder County. Would you like to say anything? Okay. Thank you for being here as well. I appreciate that. Other members of the commission, the committee that have not spoken yet that, yes.
Jennifer Levin, Disability Law, Colorado. I just want to remind everyone also that by eliminating the early voting, we also are at risk of disenfranchising a population or several populations that already face barriers. And I think it's really important to keep that in mind and make sure we do what we can to keep the early voting going, whether, you know, figure out a formula where the VSPCs are more cost effective, but at least have that available to people who may need it for whatever reason, whether it's a disability and they need to have extra time working on how to figure out one of the machines, and the judges need the extra time to figure out how to work the machines because that's a big problem. So I think if you have that extra time, you're more likely to go down and vote. And then people who have jobs that may not be as flexible as some of us, like working in a professional job, you can go down, take off, and go vote. But people who aren't so in that kind of position, they may need to have more time where they can work that out for themselves. So I think it's important to make sure we keep that option there. So just want to remind us of that.
I also want to be sensitive to costs that Secretary Williams mentioned, especially in light of Propositions 107 and 108, although I think we're going to try to help you as much as possible with those costs at the state level. You know, I think that the main intent behind House Bill 1303 was to modernize our election system. To not continue to have a conversation about how we modernize our system, I think would be a mistake. So I really appreciate this conversation because I think that's what we're getting at. We've now gone through a midterm and a general election, and I think we've learned a lot. You know, and I think there are things we can do to continue to improve the system. You know, Matt, you mentioned the throughput analysis. I think that's great. And if we can develop that as a well-tested metric, I think why shouldn't that deserve a place in some way in this formula? Because at the end of the day, it all comes down to throughput and how efficiently that we're serving people. And then I guess I would just say, you know, I'm interested in exploring the capacity issue and the facilities issue that whether it's with schools or local districts that county clerks are having and trying to figure out what we can do from a legislative standpoint to help with those issues. You know, I'm looking forward to this conversation evolving and continuing on because our election system has done more than just increase access. It's made it extremely convenient for voters to vote, and I think we need to always keep that in mind in any of the changes that we make.
Thanks, Senator. Anyone else on the committee that hasn't spoken that wants to offer anything? Let me ask a question since two of our members have been silent. They kind of represent something. One of the advantages Denver has is they control all the city facilities as well, so they have a willing, somewhat, we hope, participant in the rest of their city government. One of the discussion items that's come up is should entities that are getting public funds, tax dollars, i.e. cities and special districts, as well as school districts, have some requirement to make space available? And I'm curious if our representatives from the municipalities and the special districts have any response on that idea.
I was stalling for time. Thank you, Secretary. Michael Valdez, SDA, Special District Association. And that's a, we hadn't considered that, but certainly it's something worth delving into. We, our districts vary from the elections, of course, November. I think we see more coordinated elections, less of an issue, so we're sort of piggybacking, as you know. For us, our big issues are the May elections, when we have our elections for our directors. So it's tough to say, not knowing what the numbers are. We have to do some research in terms of what's going on in terms of the coordinated elections and those districts that are doing their own. So it's homework we'll take home with us.
Karen Goldman with the Colorado Municipal League. Over half of our municipalities have populations under 2,000, and so they're very small. The facilities are very small. I actually don't know how many of our municipalities do serve as VSPCs. I know here at the City of Aurora, where I currently work, we've been a VSPC for every even year election for the last, I think, three elections. And I know that Matt tried on a couple of occasions to use one of our senior facilities as a VSPC, and the issue is that for that two-week period of time, given the services that it provides to the seniors in that part of the City of Aurora and the size of the facility, there really isn't the opportunity to do it for that length of time. So I think that I would have to consult with the municipalities and find out what the issue is. But as I said, because we had so many municipalities that are so small, I'm not sure that there would be any advantage to having that requirement at the municipal level.
Since that had been mentioned, I thought I would at least ought to give you an official chance to respond. Not seeing any other members of the committee who haven't spoken yet who want to, I think that gives makes it so just about. Did you want to add anything? Because I want to make sure that, you know, part of the idea of pulling this committee together with different representatives, we want to hear voices. And so I want to make sure that everyone gets a chance to speak.
Thank you, Secretary. Part of working in the governor's office is that I get to wear many hats. I'm the education advisor as well for the governor, and I'm never want to speak on behalf of schools or districts, but I do think that we do have to consider the connectivity component to schools. I think that's something we're taking on as a state to increase the connectivity, the fiber, the reliability in schools and not all school districts. And ironically, it's our big school districts who have the biggest connectivity challenges. It's not always our smaller ones. So just as a side note on that, but the other component is just building off of a lot of what's been said is who's it working for and cost. I think we want to be an efficient government and we want to make sure things are working, and cost is important, right? It costs money. It costs people money. So there isn't new money. I haven't found any under any, you know, couches or chairs over there. So making sure that as we implement new laws, what does that look like as well? I think that's one of the things that Kurt wanted me to pose to folks here is what is that gonna, how is that gonna change, and where is that money coming from, and how are folks thinking about, you know, open primaries and paying for the next presidential primary, things like that. Like, where is that, you know, where do we think that money's coming from? How are we gonna pay for it as a state? Questions I'm sure you have for me as well, but just thinking about what we learned from this past election, and you are all experts, I am not, I'm here to learn from you, but just being very forward thinking of like how do we learn and move forward, and knowing that there's laws that we may tweak or current policy that's in place that may need to be improved, but staying true to who we serve and the folks that, you know, it's true, you know, I sometimes don't even get to use the services that our government provides because I'm at work. So by the time I get off work, I don't even get to go take advantage of them. So thinking about working folks, thinking about folks who don't have cars, that, you know, just thinking about folks that may not have the same luxuries as we do. So that's very small comments that I wanted to make, but this has been really great, and information is always really great for our office to have in particular. So thank you.
Thanks. I know that we may be getting to the point where folks may need to start leaving. I think we've had a pretty robust discussion, and I've got a few specific data points that we're going to try and research. I would ask Clerks Association, to the extent your counties have numbers, I know we did in El Paso, of how many went through each of the VSPCs. I think that might be helpful as well. I would like to get the group, I recognize the session starting, and that may put burdens upon many of the people in this room, some of whom like might have committees to go to or something. I'd like to set the next meeting not too far away so we have time to actually, now that you've got the data, to digest it. We tried to send it ahead of time so that you weren't having it all on you, and I really appreciate my staff who worked through the holidays to pull that together. Because it's not easy, because SCORE wasn't designed to be a data gathering service. It was designed to serve a particular function. And so we've had a number of staff members who've worked a number of hours and to pull together the data you've got in front of you. It was not something where you just hit the automatic button and it spits out. But I think it is helpful to see that on a specific county basis. Let me ask, what's the next best? We've also got Clerks Conference that's coming up next week, where all of our clerks will be out of town for that, or in town if you're in Colorado Springs from that perspective. Okay, no one laughed even. Oh, well. We could have it in Colorado Springs. That'd be great. No. So calendar-wise, and I'm aware that obviously you've got a legislative session coming up, which starts maybe tomorrow. If we look at the last full week in January, what is there a day in this of the week that is better for others in terms of the session? I'm looking at our legislators here. Or how is Wednesday the 25th? State Affairs on Wednesday? Okay, for both chambers, let's not do that. I appreciate it. That's what I'm kind of looking around for input. How's Thursday the 26th? Well, you know, you might become a senator, not a representative, too, but yeah, you could probably flip with one of your colleagues for Boulder. They might go for it. Do you know what is? I recognize, yes, we now have an important member of the Joint Budget Committee at our midst, and I do appreciate, I really do, you're making time to be here. Let's set it for Thursday the 25th. 26th, yes, if I have better eyesight. And let's set it for the afternoon, recognizing the legislature will meet in the morning at least. Is 1:30 the best time to set it for? Okay. Let's go ahead and set it for Thursday the 26th at 1:30. What's that? Now let's shoot for about 1:30 to 4, somewhere in that time frame, and let's block it for that, and then obviously, I recognize that there may be other things that need to go. And I'm not trying to end the discussion, but I wanted to make sure we got the dates set for the next meeting before we had people who started taking off. Are there any members of the committee who want to say anything else before we Okay. Are there any members of the public that wanted to provide comment that I didn't see through the back of my head? Okay. Ah, Clerk Johnson.
Yes.
Back to you.
I appreciate all the time and energy we're putting on VSPCs, but you had given us a whole laundry list of other issues. Is there a priority on any of those other ones that you see needing to tackle during this legislative session?
Yeah. We'll work on pulling that agenda together and sending that out fairly quickly. I just don't have it with me at the moment. So, yes, ma'am.
Jessica Campbell Swanson. One quick comment about when we're talking about VSPCs and the VSPC setting process, the greater discretion, and I think I agree with the comments on mobile sites and flexibility and consideration of geography, topography, population demographics, moving the things. I think really important considerations have been put here, but the greater discretion that we give to the counties, I would like to see some more uniformity around the public comments that go and that process that go with VSPC setting. I think we had counties do their public comments anywhere from February and March up until like the deadline on August 10th. There were some counties that literally put on their website, "You tell us," from very detailed, "This is where it'll be. These are the hours that will be open, et cetera." Full presentations to a blurb on a website a week before the public comments, and then the public comments were only a week. So there's just very little uniformity there. And I think if we are going to give more flexibility, especially in location and number, that what Matt said, and I agree, and having worked with a number of the county clerks in the room and not present, that they really do try to be as voter-centric as possible and serve their voters. I think having public comments that are meaningful and give duration, and especially where there will be increased flexibility if that comes to pass, will be very important. I think there's two other things to consider is, one, the time it takes for the public to adjust to a new system. And so I'm reticent to upturn the apple cart of going, let's get rid of first early voting. I think maybe some of those voters who stood in line for 3 hours will now go, and have some pause for thought of their voting patterns in the future. And so I think giving us time in another cycle while trying to increase cost efficiency, giving us time in another cycle with a first week of voting, there will give people time to adjust to that habit. The second thing is that with increased flexibility in mobile sites and all of these changes, is if there's a way to increase, or if we're talking about where can we put our money that is better serving voters, I mean, we've got a variety of website information and voter education initiatives that are happening that are a challenge as it is with even the mandates that there are. And then the more we change it, the more that becomes a difficulty and affects how voters are receiving information and adjusting to different changes. Those are just kind of factors I think if the commission could keep in mind, since we are trying to help people get their votes in. Just idea.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I'll tip my hand. I don't think we should get rid of it. I think we should reduce the number of sites, and that's my view on that first week. I think there's still some needs. I don't think there are a need for 13 different sites in large counties, but I still think there's a need that needs to be served. But that's my input, so I'll share a little bit of where I am. I appreciate very much the comments, and I think you've given us, it's been a pretty solid discussion. I appreciate everyone's willingness to participate in it. Obviously, as we go forward, there's some things we know, and we've had, I know that the COVAM commission that Hillary sat on said after the first elections here, hey, it doesn't look like the first week is being used as much as we thought. The response was, well, let's look at a presidential election. We've now had a presidential election to look at, and it is clear that first week is not being used as much as some might have hoped. And does that mean, I don't think that means we get rid of it entirely, but I do mean it, I do think it means we don't need 13 sites and the large counties for it. We will work on getting an agenda. We'll kind of give some time for this, but there's also some other issues we want to talk about at the next meeting. I appreciate everybody's time and participation and, frankly, your dedication in being here on a day in which Alabama fans could be in their dregs and ACC fans like I could be celebrating. So thank you for taking your time to be here today. Thank you.